From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome back to Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls. On a lovely sunny day here in Poprad, just underneath the Tatry Mountains, with Lee. This is truly international radio. Lee's over in...
Belly!
That's the one. Although he does get confused every now and again and starts talking Chinese, which is very confusing.
It's not. It was just chinging. I don't know.
The funny thing is, he has enough trouble with English, let alone Indian.
I know. It's a really funny language, Indian, you know.
What's beer? You must have got that one.
Beer?
Yeah.
It actually is. Because everywhere along the road, it's absolutely... That's something, if we're going to talk about, I want to talk about. Beer? Yeah. You think of the price of beer everywhere along the Indian highways, these gloriously, ludicrously potholed, bouncy, stupid roads.
Yeah.
There's some places called beer, wine... Beer, wine. And you go in there and you get a pint of beer for a quid. Well, less than a quid. Like 90 rupees, which is about 80p.
Well, it needs to be that kind of money. Look how much they earn.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, actually, no. To your average Indian, as sad as it is, I really do feel for them. That's a very expensive commodity. But yeah. If you go to the colonial bars, the new colonial bars, which are... particularly hotel bars and things like that.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. Yeah, you're paying like £8 for a pint of beer.
I'll tell them where to pour that one, I'll tell you. 85% of Brits want the government to scrap plans to stick another 3p on a litre of petrol.
Well, that's right. Honest to God, do you know how much a pint, a gallon, or blinky there? See what you've done to me now. Do you know how much a gallon of petrol is in Britain now?
No.
Honest to God, no exaggeration. I've not been there for 6 weeks, but I know it's nearly £7 a gallon.
Well, hang on, let's just clarify that, because it's an imperial gallon, not an American gallon, because they're different. And to the rest of the planet, it's about 5 litres.
Here we go, lady. Yeah, it's about £1.60 a litre, right? Now, to be honest, you don't go and put a litre in your car, do you? You go and put a gallon in. So that's 5 litres. That's nearly £7 a gallon. And now there's a campaign being led by a leading newspaper. If we don't want to name them, we won't. But they are starting a campaign to stop the Chancellor putting yet another 5p on a gallon of petrol. How are people going to carry on in Britain? If you can't, how are you going to get to work? When I worked, which, ladies and gentlemen, I do not do anymore because I think it's one of the most heinous crimes perpetrated on humanity, working.
Right.
I used to travel 40 miles to work and back. That would mean I would be spending in upwards of £15 a day just to get to and from work. How much is that a week? £70-80 a week. Then you've got to pay for parking. Ludicrous. Wages in Britain don't compensate for this kind of thing.
I didn't realise, it says in this story, which we will name the son, ex-Top Gear presenter Quinton Wilson.
You didn't know about him?
I didn't think, no, Quinton, I'm sure, was on, Fifth Gear.
Are you saying that the song's got it wrong?
Could have, yeah. I wouldn't swear to it, but I've got a huge, great feeling.
I think he was on Top Gear right at the beginning, before...
it was a good programme.
Before it was, yeah, a good programme. And, like, Fifth Gear, it was a bit rubbish. And I think he did go on to Fifth Gear. He's been around a bit as old Quentin.
Yes. And, he's been writing for years and still has his slick back hair, which is disappearing at a rapid rate of knots. But, no, I mean, he's a spokesman for Fair Fuel UK.
And
he does have a point. You know, this is... If the big story in the UK is getting the economy going. So if you
That's
put
right.
the price of petrol up, people can't travel, go to shops, do this, do that, because they're going to go, no. And you're actually going to slow the economy down. It's nuts. Absolutely.
And what about delivery trucks? What about delivering the goods to the shops where nobody's going to buy them because they can't afford the petrol to get there?
That just puts the cost of everything up. It's just ridiculous.
Of course it does.
And I know there's all this eco-friendly malarkey and all the rest of it, which reminds me, actually, I had a bit of a barney with somebody the other day about this, because they were bemoaning the fact that they think that in 2012 they're going to stop pressing CDs.
All right.
Yeah. And I said, well, what's the problem with that then? And he went, well, what about the poor shops? I said, well, hang on a minute. One minute you're eco-friendly, now you're positive towards CDs. Do you know how long it takes to break down a CD in a landfill site? Because the truth is, nobody puts them in the recycle bin, although they can recycle CDs, and actually brake pads can be partly made by them, which is a good thing. But the truth is, we don't sort our CDs out when we chuck them away, or when we've got a broken one, we just chuck it in the bin, it goes into a landfill site, and it sits there for 500 years. Marvellous.
And I have to say that I once, by, I don't know how it happened, but I actually found a Daniel O'Donnell CD in my CD collection. Now, I think my parents must have been around and left it while I wasn't looking.
Can you like, just embarrass me. Can you just stop swearing?
I did. Daniel O'Donnell.
You've done it again. I'm gonna next time
Daniel O'Donnell.
I'm going to bleep you.
Take me off here. Bleep me then. Bleep you. Me. I dare you. Bleep. Daniel O'Donnell. Daniel O'Donnell.
Next.
Anyway, I chucked a Daniel O'Donnell CD on the fire. Yeah? And you genuinely, you know how long it took to go out? About 2.5 hours. I bet even he wouldn't burn that long.
Could have put him on the top of Guy Fawkes.
Yeah, well, I bet. Well, no, we'll pursue that.
No, that'll probably be another one of those. We have compiled a great CD collection of Daniel O'Donnell because nobody plays it on the radio anymore.
Squirming on Tucker Guy Fawkes.
Yeah, absolutely. Soaring oil and gas prices have sent profits through the roof for Mr. Shell.
At Shell, yeah. You can't actually blame Shell. For the price of oil and the price of petrol in Britain. But there has to be a link somewhere, because they pay tax to the UK. There has to be a link somewhere that these companies are making £49 million a day profits. Mm. That is unbelievable. And yet we can't even afford to drive our cars to the shops to buy the overinflated priced food that we need to live.
Oh, well, I think it just proves the point, really. I think they should be, during this economic climate, as they call it, I think Shell should be very responsible. The trouble is, though, that most of the, it's not actually the prices at the pumps that drives the revenue for the oil and gas companies. You really need to, I'm not defending them by any stretch whatsoever, but the commercial side of companies like Shell, BP and everybody else is actually where they make the money. It's not at the pumps. And if you look at if you look at the actual base cost of petrol, it's very, very, very low, which is why you get this huge difference, for example, going from France to England. Massive That's difference. Right. You know, people talk about the cost of it here. Massive difference. It's it's the commercial side that's doing it, isn't it, Lee?
It's, of course it is, and it's a lot cheaper over here than it is in Britain. But I tell you what, actually, this is a consideration that I have given. And as much as people might think that I'm being a bit eccentric by saying this, I'm not. I think this is the truth. We all go on about the price of petrol, and at £7 a gallon, it is a ludicrous amount. But it is one of the most important liquids that we have in our life. But look at the price of beer in Britain. Buy a gallon of beer, that's going to cost you over £30. £7 for a gallon of petrol, £30 for a gallon of beer.
Casting my mind back, actually. When I was an apprentice, I had a rather large BSA motorbike. And my budget...
BSA? What's a BSA?
BSA. Birmingham Small Arms. And apart from the fact you knew it was all right if it leaked oil out the bottom.
you're not from Birmingham. You don't have small arms because you're built like an ape.
Anyway, I used to get 3 gallons of petrol in there a week, and it used to cost me under £1.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
Absolutely.
I know.
And that was my budget.
How much was a pint of beer?
Oh, I wouldn't have known, Lee, because I'd have only been 16 at that point, so I couldn't have gone into pubs.
Oh, of course, Eric, yes. This is the man who broke his legs, he's broke his neck, he's died 15 times. But, of course, he wouldn't go into a pub at the age of 18.
Mark you, I will confess that I did go into the old Ritz film cinema in Hitchin in Hertfordshire as a 16-year-old to watch Born to be Wild, the film that was out at the time, and it was an 18 certificate. And I had to...
Oh, Eric.
And she said, are you 18? I said, yeah, of course. I've got a look at me bikes outside. She said, that doesn't mean a thing. Where's your licence? So I managed to keep my thumb over me, the date bit of my licence out of my pocket. And she went, okay then, well, I'm not looking anymore. And you could see it was kind of like, oh, all right, can't be bothered. So I did get to see Born to be Wild. But
you naughty, naughty boy. Who was in Born to be Wild then?
I don't know. I do know, but I can't remember. No. But I just remember Steppenwolf.
Steppenwolf?
Steppenwolf.
Steppen. Yeah, with a P.
With a P.
Yeah, that's
can
right.
Can I have a beep?
How old were you? Did get lost? You weren't 16 when Steppenwolf did that.
Can I have a pee, please, Lee?
You can, well, I thought you'd just been for one door.
No. It's yes, I was.
You weren't 16 when Steppenwolf did that.
Well, that's when it came to our cinema and it was 18 certificate. Because all of us,
a gentleman, he makes it all up, you know.
No, absolute fact. All of us bikers from the Hell's, the group in Stevenage,
Hell's Kindergarten, if you were that young,
the people in Stevenage, which was colloquially known as the Nighthawks. It was it was so funny. I just had a thought come into my brain because every now and again the police used to visit us, and it was a club that in the property of Lady Bowes Lion in Stevenage, and some of the nice policemen were also bikers. So what would happen was we'd get a phone call saying club's being raided, and then everybody had run to the safe, which was the manager's safe, not of the centre. And he would be standing there with the safe open. All these bikers would very quickly take their belts off with their studs on them and bits of chain hanging off of them and any kind of thing that the police could constitute as a weapon. And you'd see all these big, airy bikers walking around with their hands in their pockets, because if they didn't, their jeans would fall down. It was bizarre. It was bizarre.
How can you call these bikers? They're straight out of kindergarten. They can't go for a pint of beer because they're too young. And as soon as the police come, they take all the studs off.
I was the baby. I was the baby.
Did they use the bath,
No. But occasionally they did fix my bike for me, bless them.
A two-wheeler?
No, three-wheeler.
And you have stabilisers as well?
No, it was a three-wheeler. It had a sidecar on it called a Bullet, which was a racing kind of sidecar. And it was 600cc. There you go, 600cc. BSA M20 was my first bike on the road. And it used to do 75 on the straight without the lights on and 65 with the lights on.
You know what they all ride about on here?
What?
Around here. True, this is true.
Oh, Royal Enfields.
Yeah, Royal Enfields, man.
Yeah, I know.
They are beautiful.
They sound lovely, don't they? Oh.
Well, they do.
Let's see if anybody else can remember the BSA M20, an aerial arrow,
I remember those.
Or a Suzuki Super 6. That was fast.
That was fast.
That was.
Exactly how they sounded as well, wasn't it? Like somebody throwing up,
Zing, zing, zing. No, it was all that zing, zing, zing noise, that one. Anyway, moving along, the Euro's in trouble again.
Oh, I know, Eric, what we're going to do.
Well, I don't want the Euro to go away.
Well, to be honest, I've been like having a little look at it, because in principle I don't like the euro, and I like the fact that, you know, like we have our own currency, and India has its own currency, and countries have their own currency.
Sure.
It gives you a sense in independence and identity. But if the euro crashes now,
right?
Because, yeah, it's going to bring us, the UK particularly, we're going to go right back into the euro.
Having said that, you should be aware that things like the British bonds, the banking bonds, are now much more sought after than the euro bonds, and so therefore it's actually helping out Great Britain a little bit at the minute. There you go.
Do you think that'll last, though?
It'll be a short-term thing. The problem with the euro is, because even though I'm in the eurozone, if I go to Poland, for example, which is like an hour away, I've then got to use zloty.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
If I go to...
She's a nice girl.
Yeah, bless. If I want to go 3 hours down the road, I get to Hungary where I have to use a florin. which is making
she used to be in Coronation Street.
Yeah, which is making the euro sound really interesting. Having said that, I don't. But if I were to go to Germany, Holland, France, occasionally I do go to the Czech Republic, where the currency that I have in my pocket now, the euro, goes everywhere else. It's fine, and equally, I think it's incredibly good for like the dollar, because you've got a huge bunch of states. Which are under a common flag, and it does work there because the economy is all based on those states put together as one. The problem with the euro is that there are some states under the euro banner which are more driven than others, have different qualities of life, and therefore what is called the GDP, the gross domestic product of those countries, is very different. Germany, France, for example, is very different to Slovakia. Slovakia's got the least amount of debt, and the euro fits in nicely, but it wouldn't fit in nicely in other areas, which is why Greece has got the problem. And so that's where it just can't work. That's the whole problem with the whole sort of European aspect. Bring back the original concept of free trade, free movement, all that sort of stuff. Absolutely right. Trade as a partner and work together as a group. But when you try and put, you know, a generic banking system in for the whole group, it can't work. It's physically impossible.
Of course it can't.
It'll work for a little while, but I'm sure they're going to hold on to it for some time to come. And I wouldn't mind betting that both Sarkozy and Merkel and their next in lines, whoever they might be, will try and keep hold of it, even if that does mean getting rid of Greece out of it.
I think you're right. And it's like Vince Cable, our illustrious business secretary in Britain, has described it as Armageddon. Well, Armageddon means the end of the world.
He's not. You know. He's not.
Well, no, it isn't.
I mean, the worst thing that would have to happen, Lee, is I'd have to go onto my wall, break open the krona, which are in it, which I've kept beautifully, and actually sealed them into one of those, what do you call it? One of those...
Safe.
No, your nana.
Frame.
It's in a frame, but it's also in
picture
one of...
Picture frame.
Sometimes
I'm only
trying
to help.
Yes, you're helping me like a chocolate fire guard. where you put... laminated, that's it, that's the word. They're laminated first. And,
so you've got them down on a farm.
Yeah, down. Oh, I give up. Come back, Mark, please. but there you go. Vince Cable, you were talking about.
I forgot what I was saying now, yeah. Oh, yeah, well, he says it's Armageddon. Well, it could be Armageddon for certain countries, like you say. And really, the problem is, I don't think it's Armageddon.
No.
I think this whole Eurozone thing and this whole banking crisis that we've got is not Armageddon. It is lemming time. This is the whole... Good. Running like lemmings to the edge of the precipice and not saying, let's do something realistic.
It's the same as, I haven't seen a massive headline, but I know this for fact, that they were whinging about China equaling up the trade between the EU and China. And the trade increase from the EU into China is well over 20% this time.
That's right.
So they are doing it. But where's that headline?
Well, I think at the moment, I think that headline is about, obviously, because I know it and you know it, and we don't live out in China, so somebody's got to have told us.
Yeah, but we're a bit news houndy, aren't we?
Well, that's right. And in the right places, it is something there. And if you read the Financial Times or you read, indeed, the Times and the Telegraph, that sort of thing is there. But the thing that affects people in Europe and in Britain is the euro and the crisis that we have in the UK. Hmm. And that's what they write about. And that's
anyway, I'm going to stop it there because that's my biggest complaint about the media is too much focus on negative stuff. So let's move on to something more interesting.
Are we doing the Time of Motion Man?
We are doing the Time of Motion Man. Who filmed Sex Life to see who was putting the most effort in. So, okay, girls, let's pause for you. When it's ladies and gentlemen's time, girls, are you putting the most effort in? Pause. The answer was yes, I knew. Fellas...
Yeah.
Oh, it's fellas. It was funny because there was a thing on television last night where there were some ladies, not that you could see, because it was, a film, and there was a bit of ladies and gentlemen's going on. And after it, he looks up, grabs the television handset, turns the television on, and tells the lady to go and get him a beer. Well, that's not
true. What's wrong with that? I think that's quite romantic.
She tries to give him a kiss, and he goes, "What?" And that was the end of the bit, so I can understand all the girls screaming at the moment. But anyway, this guy has now ended up in court.
Well, of course he has as well. Yeah, he deserves to be as well. I think he's a time and motion man, right? Mm. Which means that he studies how things work and who's doing what and everything like that. And his claim, right, in court, because he was taken to court for illegally filming people, covertly filming his girlfriend doing ladies and gentlemen's with him, right? Now, if he'd have asked her and said, "Do you mind if I film this, Doc? Because I want to do a bit of time and motion study on it," it'd have been all right, but he didn't. He put his camera phone in the bedroom.
It gets worse, doesn't it? Because he then downloaded the video onto his laptop and gave a professional assessment of his performance.
I know. Well, the thing is, it's so simple, isn't it? It's dead simple, right? The less motion, the more time it takes.
Yes.
You put a bit of a spurt on, and it's all over in seconds.
Oh, dear. Anyway, it went to a court, didn't it?
Yeah, he went to court. I tell you what, he was going for 34 minutes. Well, they were both going for 34 minutes.
Blimey.
Right? Yeah, well, I already did it seven times. But and so he then went to evaluate his own performance.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend got a bit annoyed with him and took him to a court.
I don't blame her, to be quite honest. I mean, you wouldn't want your bits flashing about in universities and things, would you?
I know, and you know what?
What?
I've missed the end of the story, so I can't remember. I can't tell what happened to him.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, no, the secret is don't go filming and putting all your bits on in front of the...
No, actually, because that is wrong. That is wrong. If you're not both agreeing, you shouldn't do it.
No, absolutely not. Well, I wouldn't want anybody filming my bits anyway.
I wouldn't. I'd hate anybody filming your bits and putting them on the internet, man. That'd be terrible. That'd be disgusting.
Stop it. Don't make me laugh. It makes me cough. Oh, dear.
Don't cough. Oh, God. Do you want to talk about India again?
No. US parents who reportedly buy mail order lorries infected with chicken pox to try to help their children build up immunity from virus are being warned the practice could be dangerous. Hello. Yeah. Good morning.
Basically, what you've got is a stick of chicken pox, right?
Yeah.
A stick, frozen chicken pox, and you give it your kid, and your kid starts licking it and then sucking it. And that is to build up its immunity against the virus. Well, I tell you what, it's an old saying, but only in America could they actually consider that.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, I've got to ask, what was it like? I hate you. You went to the Grand Prix.
Well, I don't really think I'm going to tell you now because you won't play my sound bites of the cars going round and round. It was ludicrous. I tell you what, I thought Formula One was like Preparation H until I realised one makes your ears bleed and the other stops you bleep me doing the same.
So
it was just ludicrous. It was ludicrous.
Why?
It was just noisy and boring and ridiculous and pointless, and I couldn't see anybody. It was like having a big multi-million-pound scale X trick going round and round and round.
So you were there. You were on practice day, weren't you?
Yeah. So
the Saturday. So they weren't racing.
It had Jason Buttons there, and that Michael Schumacher, and Christine Hamilton was there. Yeah.
Who?
Christine Hamilton, she was racing.
Right.
Yeah, they kept saying that. And now Hamilton's coming up on the inside. You know,
No, they did not.
They did.
Not.
I got the recordings I sent to you. You have a listen.
They did not say that in that context because they were practicing for the Grand Prix and then doing qualifying.
What a load of rubbish, man. Every time, even one of them crashed, I don't know who it was. They had a little bit of a coming off the track thing. And the difference between Formula One and Scalextric is one. Simple what? Difference. What? That's it. You couldn't reach down, pick up the thing and put it back on the track.
Well, I was watching qualifying on the telly here because we get great coverage.
See me? See me?
Well, no, I kept waving to the telly, but you didn't wave back. Some mate you are. No, we get great coverage on STV here. It's really good. Very, 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 very good.
Sorry, go on. I was just going to say, there is a very serious point about bringing F1 to India, though. And I mean this, and nobody should take offence at this because it isn't an offensive statement. The fact is that driving in India is really in its infancy. And the people who drive in India drive like children. It's the most ludicrous place for driver I've ever seen. If you've got a three-lane highway, they will turn it into eight lanes.
Right.
And they don't stay in their own lane. They'll go anywhere. They'll go on the hard shoulder to overtake each other. The speed limit generally around India is 60 miles an hour, or the equivalent of 60 miles an hour. And most of them travel at about 80 to 90 or 100 miles an hour. You've got tuk-tuks. You've got women sitting side saddle on motorbikes, bouncing around. It's the most lethal place I've ever known driving in the world, wherever I've been. And to put Formula One in the heart of Delhi, the craziest city I've ever been to, and to have these heroes of racing and tempestuous driving showing off just as they do around there, and then for the Indian drivers to go back on to this major highway they've built outside, I can't remember what it's called, the expressway, outside the, and then to emulate them is ludicrous. This isn't teaching Indian people how to drive, and I make no bones about it. Have a look on the YouTube at some of the videos of the driving in India. It's ludicrous. And then to put this there is ludicrous. The people who did it, $400 million they paid to bring this here, and all it is noise and smell and noise and smell.
Right, let's finish the programme with a British pensioner is set to emigrate to New Zealand. Now, this British pensioner is aged 102. Louise Sids is 102, and she's going to be near her daughter because her care home in Horsted in Kent is being closed down.
The local authority won't pay for it anymore.
Yeah, the local authority has offered to rehome her, but she's decided to move to Auckland because it's a better quality of life. I rest my case.
I rest my case too.
Well, Louise, I hope you get out there really well. I hope your family look after you out there. You will have a lovely time in New Zealand, and you won't miss the weather, no, because it's a downside better than it is in the UK. And even though people campaigned to keep the care home open, the county council said no. Marvellous.
Yes.
That's caring for the community. And all I'll say to the Kent County Council people, which is very hard to say, and you have to say it carefully, as somebody on Radio 5 once got it wrong, you'll be old one day, and I trust it doesn't happen to you, that you lose your home because some bureaucrat decides it's cheaper to move you somewhere else. On the happy note, we've got to leave. Postcard from Poplar. Say goodbye, Lee.
Bye-bye, everybody.
See you soon, girls.
From the heart of the earth to the world, RTI.